Good afternoon. I'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session for the Mesa City Council for Monday, January 24th, 2011. A big day. So we'll start out by reviewing tonight's
big agenda
for the big day. Let me see. Nothing going on right at the first of the meeting. Okay.
Could we?
One of the things we will do is that we're switching the order. The mayor's welcome will come after the Pledge of Allegiance, and then we'll go on with the rest of the meeting. So that's one change in the order, but that's no big deal. Anything else? Items 6 or 7? 7B through 8C.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. We'd like to pull 7A from the agenda. They've requested a date change, so we'll be putting that on the February 7th agenda.
Okay, so 7A is pulled from the agenda for a date change.
Yes, please.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. 8D through 8H. 8I through 9A, 9B through 11B. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. On item 10B, I know this is an introduction, and I'm not going to ask it to be pulled, but I still have some questions I'm going to try to be answering, having answered by staff in terms of the restrictions on locations. I was not at the study session that where the council gave direction on this particular one. So
one of the things that we did not discuss that I know other councils have discussed, and I didn't know if there was anything that was anticipated in that also, was operating hours. It seems like other cities, and I don't know why other cities are getting that detailed in it. I just didn't know if it had come up in the conversation at all. I mean, I know one city was trying, can't remember which one it was, having a big deal. They only wanted to allow it from like, you know, noon till 6 or something like that. It seemed overly restrictive, but I don't know what the conversation was.
Mayor, Council, the ordinance that's before you proposes to limit operating hours, but to 8 to 9, 8 a.m. in the morning to 9
Okay,
p.m.
so it does include those.
Standard retail.
Somehow I had missed that.
Yes, and I can answer any other questions.
Okay. That was it. Thank you.
Okay.
Ms. Spinner.
Mayor, I just wanted to let the council know that DHS did send us some information today, and they are going to implement or propose some additional rules, and they gave some indication as to how they may go about awarding dispensaries or authorizing dispensaries. And what they have said is that they have divided the state into community health analysis areas. They're called CHAAs. And what DHS expects to do is to award one registration.
CHAAs. Oh, there. Yeah, we're gonna leave it at that. There'll be plenty of time to make comments on that one. That's too easy. Go ahead.
What DHS states is that they expect to award one certificate for each CHAA. So for each.
Community.
Let me go back to community health analysis area.
So we are
now looking at the M1, M2 zoning, and how does that match up with their maps for the community health analysis areas. But they also say, obviously, they will also require all applicants to be in accordance with local zoning.
Is it CHAAs or is it CHAZ?
I have been told CHAAs, Mayor.
It's C-H-A...
A. C-H-A-A.
Chaw.
There's no E on the end.
There's no S.
It's just a chaw.
The Icelandic, okay. Because if it was Chaz, we could just call him Chuck for short. Okay. All right, thank you. Anything
that was
else?
A long flight.
Thanks, yeah, it was. Thank you, Gordon. All right. Thank you. Anything else on the agenda? Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss an update by Cox Communications. Mr. Stahl, Michael Stahl, who I'm sure will reintroduce himself and whoever else he has with him.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. When you call in, you may probably talk to Jonathan Babbitt. That's who's accompanying me tonight from our government affairs team at Cox Communications. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to listen to us this evening.
When I call in Cox, I'm like put on hold for a long time. Can we talk?
I
thought maybe we'd go over some of my personal, because, you know, I got you here. I'm not listening to any music or anything.
Mr. Mayor, I know you have Ivan Johnson's direct line.
Oh,
so
okay. Me on that. All righty, go ahead.
Thank you very much. The last time we were before you was March of 08, excuse me. We try to do this about every 3 years to make sure that the council's up to date on what we're doing. Obviously, we share a license with the city, so obviously just behooves us to come before you and let you know what we're doing as you have an interest in our business. Why don't we go ahead and talk about the technical advancements? Obviously, I mentioned we were here in March of 08. Since that time, we were getting ready to do a major upgrade of our entire metropolitan network. We have since completed that upgrade, spent about $500 million total, moving or actually expanding our network by 25%, and actually have the ability now to offer about 2 gigabits of combined bandwidth to every home in the metropolitan area. So it's a significant upgrade. By comparison, you may have read in the media that Google was talking about doing a build to the home in a selected community. They were only going to offer 1 gig to the home. So it gives you an idea of the scalability of our network. Let's go to the next page. Some of the services that we offer now that really have taken hold since the last update was Cox On Demand, which is a service we offer, has thousands and thousands of hours of free and pay programming. We launched HD, and we actually have over 100 channels of unique programming now. That's not multiple level program. It's actually specific channels that are not repeated programming, so 100 unique channels. The ability to offer tiered up to 50 megs of internet and standard packaging to the home and to the business. We're actually testing modems now that go well over 200 megabits to the home. And, of course, if you're a business, you can buy much in excess of that for specialized connectivity. The way we're going to market a lot of our upcoming products is through Cox Digital Stores. Right now we have two of those stores remodeled and open. One's over here in the Tempe Town Center. If you get a chance, if you're over there, stop into that store. That's an interesting store. It's how we'll go in the future. We're trying to get here, I promise you that. The other one's up on Bell Road, so we'll move that forward and get it to Mesa as soon as we can. Next slide, we talk a little bit about what we've been doing. The last couple of years, we actually purchased a significant amount of 4G, or of licensed spectrum through auctions in the FCC. We're planning to utilize that for a 4G launch eventually. The great thing about that particular spectrum is it allows us to get to areas where we don't have cable deployed inside communities, which is great because you can do voice, video, data without having to do extensive builds, disrupting property, that kind of thing. The amount of services or the types of services that you can deploy over there are fairly extensive. Not only the traditional voice, video, and data, but also alarm monitoring, all kinds of different things, and we're looking at that kind of stuff down the road. Rovi, which is our, you may have noticed on your cable box, we changed the interactive program guide recently. That's still rolling out. It's about done, by the way. And it enhanced the graphics. That's something else we've done. Our customers have found that quite useful and much more user-friendly than the old one. It was fairly clunky and hard to use. So recent upgrade. And then we're also looking at home networking solutions and eventual home security monitoring stuff. Makes logical sense since we have the network to utilize it for those particular types of things. On the community commitment side, we've done quite a bit. You can see, I'm not going to read through this entire list, but just suffice to say, $19 million in cash and in-kind support throughout the valley. Some things we do, a lot of things in this particular list down here in these bullet points are throughout the valley. Obviously, the Mesa Chamber is listed on there. We also support the Sister Cities cause through the city, serve on their board and play in their golf tournament, support the golf tournament, those types of things. Spend quite a bit of time over here on Mesa. I've seen several of you at the Mesa Chamber of Commerce board meetings. So that's something I thoroughly enjoy coming over here for. Let's go to the next page. Just gives you an idea of some of the our commitment to the customers. It gives you an idea of how many of the J.D. Powers awards we've won over the last few years. I draw your attention to the telephone awards 8 years in a row, and certainly the internet. The Cox Business rollout too. We're significantly expanding our builds, our build dollars, and our builds to local business. It's been rated as one of the top-notch telecommunication services serving local business in Arizona. I won't go across what we spent on the network because that was entailed within the $500 million upgrade. But let's go over to Cox Business a little bit. Just important to point out that this is in these times of economic trouble where we're seeing our growth is actually in the Cox Business side, CB as we like to call it internally, because we actually can provide fairly significant savings to local business. And as a result, we've seen a great deal of interest in folks switching their telecommunication services over to us. Gives you an idea of some of the major players that we provide service to in the metropolitan area. And what isn't listed on this list is actually we're a primary provider for several municipal organizations as well, municipal cities and towns. And then finally, in the statewide commitment, Cox, Arizona, was recently selected by our parent company, Cox Enterprises, to house their primary data center. It's actually a secondary center on their primary, but it acts as a primary center, really. It's hard to explain, but it does. It's actually an $80 million investment, and it actually will house the data interests for Cox Enterprises companies, which are comprised of Cox Communications, of course, Mannheim, Auto Traders, Cox Radio, Television, and Newspapers, and Valpak. So fairly significant company moving here and putting their stock here in the community, investing in the community. Communities of interest, as you can imagine, in these days of tight budgets, they're also looking at centralizing some operations. Arizona was recently chosen to centralize one of four locations for centralization of Cox Communications warehouse operations for equipment, and then also we were selected as one of the Spanish the locations for their Spanish operations. People call in that speak Spanish. We take the calls from all over the United States and communicate with folks all there. And that, I wanted to keep it as short as possible. You can read through this on your own, and of course, send me an email if you have any questions, or of course, I'm happy to entertain any questions you might have at this time as well.
Any questions for Michael? No, thank you very much. You, I know Cox is active. We see each other at a lot of different events and everything, so we appreciate Cox's involvement in the community and the services they provide. Let me ask you something. In the scheme of things nationwide, where does Cox Enterprises rank as far as providers?
If you're talking size, I believe we are the third largest cable provider in the United States.
Okay.
It's a privately held company. It's not publicly traded like
right.
Comcast.
I knew you were, as far as customers, I knew you were in the top five. I just didn't realize. Okay, good.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the council.
And I'll be calling you about that service interruption I had the other day. Thank you. Okay, the next item is to hear a presentation, discuss and provide direction on a convenience store ordinance. Chief, you want to introduce everyone at the table, reintroduce everyone at the table there?
Mr. Mayor, I'm Kathy Kirk. I'm a commander at Superstition District.
Patty Gallagher to my right, crime prevention specialist. We're back again. I think my hair is getting grayer and grayer every time we meet.
Funny, but I don't notice anything.
Does that just mean you have to use more color on it?
Yeah. Gave away my secret. First of all, I just want to thank everybody. I want to thank our stakeholders, especially the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance and all the city staff and department staff who really has been working really, really hard on this, and we are back again. I think this is probably the third or fourth time we've talked about it, trying to find that balance where we have some good public safety practices, something that the stakeholders and the businesses can work with, and we really have been trying to find that balance, and I really do think we're getting very, very close. And so what I like to do is obviously do the presentation and seek the direction from council to move forward with the development of a convenience store ordinance based on SEPTED principles, which are crime prevention through environmental design. What will this ordinance do for us? Why are we here? We believe that the elements of this ordinance will aid in deterring crime through prevention. This ordinance will improve safety at the businesses. This ordinance will increase criminal apprehension with some of the elements and strategies within the ordinance. This ordinance will improve successful prosecution of criminals. It will also help reduce police workload and conserve the limited police resources that our department has. I'm briefly going to go over the history because we kind of went over the history every time we meet, but this started really in 2009 where we started meeting with the convenience stores to come up with some ordinance that was based on SEPTED. The scope of the problem is, in reviewing the top 20 locations for theft in the city, 40% occur at convenience stores. Specifically, each patrol district tracked its top 20 theft locations in 2009, and those were the Central Patrol District, 10 locations are convenience stores, the Dobson Station, 12 locations are convenience stores, Red Mountain District, 10 locations were convenience stores, and the Superstition District, 6 locations were convenience stores. We've continued to meet with stakeholders. In fact, we had a meeting about 2 weeks ago to go over the ordinance that will be presented to council today. I believe that was a very successful meeting where we did get a lot of buy-in and consensus with the stakeholders, specifically the Arizona Food Marketing Alliance. I will go over at the end some of their concerns that they still have, and a lot of those that we have will make changes. So we have been successful in meeting with the groups. What you have before you today is you basically have two versions of the ordinance. One of them is very similar to the one that we presented last time. Both versions require all convenience stores to have a certificate of registration. Both versions have the comply with the level one security measures within 90 days of adoption, and I'll go over all those different measures with you. All new or remodeled stores will comply with all security measures within the ordinance. First of all, version one. Version one is the full compliance, requires that all convenience stores abide by all security measures within the proposed ordinance. It also allows for the chief of police to issue a variance, if appropriate, if stores are not having an impact on their crime within their stores.
And that's at his discretion?
Yes, based on okay.
Question.
Councilmember Higgins.
So does that mean the stores had full compliance, yet they still have issues? The chief can come in and request further, further changes? To make it even more over and above the normal?
Yes, version one does not have any stipulations of like calls for service or a measurement like that.
Right.
It's if we have a store that continues to have problems after working with our the department to improve those areas, that the chief can come in and require a security plan.
So that's saying that if someone meets all the ordinances, we're going to approve it. We can come back in later and still ask them to do more.
If they're not reducing their crime.
Okay.
I'm a little confused.
Yeah, I think in version one.
Yeah, version one is the whole.
Does not include the extra provision.
No.
So in version one, all convenience stores, regardless of whether they've had calls for service or not, have to implement all security measures identified.
And they can go to the chief if for whatever, a hardship, whatever, and ask to not have to implement the whole
thing. Request a variance.
That's the variance.
Right. But to Councilmember Higgins' questions, if they implement all of these provisions and there's still a significant number of calls for service, version one does not include the additional provision that the police chief can impose additional requirements. That provision is found in version two. It can certainly be added to version one, but it is not currently.
Back up a slide because it says it on version one slide. I'm sorry. Can you back up?
There is no verdict.
The variance, sure. The variance is actually if a store, like say a small store, can't do certain things because of, you know, financially or the, you know, the build of their store, then the variance, they can apply for that, and then we can grant the variance and work with them to come up with different security measures that would be more.
So we're discussing variance and using that same word to mean two different things. One, not to come up to standards of full version one, and we're using it as a second to where even if we come up and use version one.
You're correct. I read that wrong. It's the variance that would be appropriate. So if a store, let's say the visibility, and that's my mistake, it allows the chief to issue variance for that would be appropriate. Say business says, if I cover that window, it'll take 70% of my stock. The chief can make that variance at that.
Well, let's make sure we do. There's only one definition of variance. You have something which is required. A variance allows you to not do that which is required.
Correct. Correct.
In no way can you say variance requires you something else. No. Yeah, you have a list of things you have to do, and the chief of police can say, you don't have to do everything. You can do something different. That's a variance.
Alternative.
Alternative. That's a variance.
That's my mistake.
There's only one meaning of variance. Does that make
sense? No, it does to me, but that's not what I heard. And
okay.
He agrees.
Right. That's cool. Okay,
and Ms. Spinner is correct that the additional security is not in version one.
Okay.
It's the variances.
All right. That
thank you.
Okay, version two is the tiered system. And really, the tiered system came from input. Really was recommended by the industry. We had some meetings with them to come up with the criteria that would fit the tiered system. The tiered system is mandated on security measures based on an average crime risk of 7 or more calls per month. And the way we came up with that 7 calls is we looked at the average calls. We wanted to target what we talked about before, the 10% stores that were really the problems. We didn't want to impact some of the stores that weren't having an issue. So that's really where the tiered system comes into. And that 7 calls for service, that incorporates about 10% of all convenience stores, which is about 15. One of the things that we had discussed previous was the online reporting. Unfortunately, the online reporting is not up and running with our department. It's probably 2 months out. So we were reluctant to include it in the ordinance. But one of the discussions that we had is once that online reporting is instituted, we could evaluate the calls for service and determine if those calls for service would be counted as the crime risk numbers. We may have to come up with a ratio where, you know, three online calls equals one, or if we did unlimited online calls for service, there could be a potential for abuse. So I think we're going to have to monitor that and evaluate that when that comes online. Unfortunately, the IT situation is that we're not ready to go up on that. We will be coming to Mr. Brady and probably council to talk about the criteria for online. So that still is a little bit out.
One other thing, Chief. And I appreciate you coming up with that information and trying to find what would enable us to focus in on those abusers. What if a store gets 3 felony incidents in a month? Let's say there's 3 armed robberies, there's an assault, there's something that goes well beyond your normal beer run or your donut run. I mean, that would seem like that's creating a very unsafe environment. Was there any consideration for treating calls differently? And it would seem like if it's a felony that's happened and that happens repeatedly, we would have much more interest in what they're doing to truly protect the public. Because at that point in time, there's no doubt that the public is at risk. Was there any consideration given to that?
We did discuss that, and we talked about doing a waiting system or. Because you're absolutely right. One armed robbery is more dangerous than 7 beer thefts when it comes to that. The discussions we had would be very difficult. That's why we went with just a set number, because it would be really difficult to govern on, you know, two armed robberies versus
Personally, to me, it would seem like it would be an easy. I appreciate the doing the weight. I don't think you need to get that fancy. You know, to me, if someone has two armed robberies in a month, you got to look and see if there's something wrong at the store. Maybe it's the neighborhood, maybe it's the store. But at that time, I don't think anyone would have a problem with the police department going in saying, is there something wrong at the store? Especially if they only have a level one security measures in place. And maybe if our interest is really in maximizing public safety, we at least give the police department or the chief of police the ability to go in if there's multiple felonies, and those are pretty well defined, and they're going to get called. I mean, these aren't ones that people are going to hold back. They're going to get called. We're going to respond to them. But at that point in time, the focus really is on public safety, and it would seem like if they're only at a level one, you know, if they had the whole measure, there's not a whole lot we can do. That just is what happens. But I would think that we would at least like to take a look and say, hey, can we avoid this in the future? Because now you got people that are doing things that really put the innocent victim, the bystander, at real risk. And so I don't know whether you can put anything in there, but I'd like to see something that would allow at least the PD to go in and talk. And just leave that on the table. We don't have to discuss it in full here.
Our current practice is if we do have an armed robbery, the crime prevention special will automatically right now go out and work with the store. If we have, obviously, an aggravated assault or detectives. So we do try to work with them on any traumatic type of crimes. But you're right, there's nothing in the ordinance that says...
Yeah, because the purpose of an ordinance is not to ask for cooperation. If we wanted to do that, we wouldn't be sitting here.
Correct.
The purpose of an ordinance is to create a minimum level of performance. And what we're saying with this ordinance is that we've defined that there is a problem, that there's a certain there's a minimum level of performance that's required. And if someone is, through doing that, is not doing all they can, I think we need to have the ability to go in and say, listen, you're a risk now, and at least do more than just ask for cooperation. So
we can definitely look at.
Yeah, Mayor, if that's the direction of the council, we will take this back and try and add something.
I don't know if it is or not. Let's leave it till the end, and then we can talk about it at the end, okay? Councilman Richens has something to put in on it.
The more I look at this, the more I worry that we're going to have a lot of convenience stores that have six calls for service per month, and that's it. Once they hit six, they're not calling anymore. And it just creates such a disincentive to report crime. Is there another threshold we can use besides calls for service? Because it seems like we're trying to reduce calls for service, not necessarily prevent crime with this approach. So is it one or the other or both?
Well, definitely in the tiered system, you need some kind of measurement that bumps you up to the next one. And we looked at calls for service, and we tried to focus in on the 10%, the troubled stores, and what kind of calls were they having and what, you know, how many. That's where we came up with the number seven. One of the things that we had discussed at the last meeting was that anytime you have a threshold like that, you are risking where people aren't going to call because they don't want to bump into that number seven. But what we did put in there is if you do bump into, let's say you have seven calls for service, you have 90 days to reduce that. So we added that into the ordinance where you have 3 months to work with us, and then we will reevaluate your call. If they go down, then you're okay.
And don't we have, aren't most of these, last report was that most of these in the top 10 are part of some larger system, their chains or franchise. Don't they have internal policies that require calls, reporting to police?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
How do we define a call as well? Is it the worker, the person who works at the particular store is a call? What if I'm standing out front at the Red Box and I'm getting a video and I see somebody do a beer run and I call? Does that count as a call for service? If a customer calls?
The calls that we evaluated were calls for service at that particular convenience store. If there was an accident and people drove into the convenience store parking lot, we didn't count that. We only counted... you may want to touch
on regardless who calls.
A customer or an employee.
Police service calls to that store.
Okay, by anyone.
Correct.
Got it. Okay, thank
Councilman
you.
Kavanaugh.
Yeah, just to follow up on what Councilmember Richens raised, this is part of the issues that we discussed in Public Safety Committee over the many, 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 many months. we've looked at this and all the different versions that we've looked at. And I think that's why, at least from the public safety committee standpoint, we steered away from this the triggering mechanism of the calls for service, because we also had a concern that it would be a disincentive to report crimes. And so that's why I think that at least the version one is certainly is a more simple approach. But we tried to deal with the industry concerns by permitting the option for the alternative security plan if the design of the building or the financial issues of the particular store would make it difficult to comply with. The goal is to have security measures that are kind of, that are equivalent that to help address the criminal issue, not to create a hardship for the business. But that's why at least from my perspective, version one is more simple in terms of both police department and the industry. And it, but it has the safety valve of the alternate security plan option. But that's where, with the tiered approach, I think we're going to continue to have some complexities that will create some challenges for us. Thank you.
Now, go over the on the tiered system, the different levels, to give you an idea. Level one, all convenience stores will be impacted by level one. That includes your height markers, your security signs, your store visibility, employee safety training, trespass enforcement program, and additional general safety measures were lighting by payphones and by doorways, graffiti removal, clerk in the customer area or doors locked or alarmed when they're not within the or within the work area, and address numbers for exterior of buildings. That's what everybody would be required under the tiered system. On the tiered system of level two, convenience stores that meet the threshold of calls for service would be required to obviously comply with all level one requirements. In addition, they would have to have an alarm system and a drop safe. Additional safety measures for level two would be outdoor trash area lighting, the beer coolers locked from 2 to 6 a.m., which is consistent with state law. We had recommended the beer floor displays netted or secured from 2 to 6. Input from the industry, they want that bumped up to level three, and through discussion with the police department, we're okay with bumping that the netting up to level three.
If you could clarify something, beer coolers by state law have to be locked between 2 and 6.
I'm sorry, they're not to be locked. They just can't sell from 2 to 6.
Okay, gotcha.
So that would be a additional measure for the convenience store.
Because it seemed a little weird that you would lock blue kill, beer coolers but still allow floor displays. Okay.
And then after 90 days, if the store was unable to reduce their calls for service, they would be bumped up to level three. Level three convenience stores would be required to comply with level one and two security measures. In addition, they would be required to install surveillance cameras, two interior, two exterior, and retain the recordings for a minimum of 15 days. If after level three, if a convenience store continues to experience a crime risk of 7 or more calls for another 90 days, the chief of police may require additional security measures targeted at the specific criminal acts or suspected criminal activity occurring at the store. Now, we really tried to wordsmith this statement because we didn't want it so broad that the chief could say, I want you to have A, B, and C in your store. We wanted the additional requirements to be specific to that crime that was being committed. For example, if there was graffiti continually being done in the back and there was no lighting in the back, the chief could require lighting in the back of the store. That's just an example. We met with the industry. They came up with a version of this, which was very similar, but as they would say, softening it up. We just feel that has to be direct, so there's no misinterpretation in the ordinance.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
How come under the alternative A, we don't have that option for the chief to, or do we have the option for the chief to?
No, it is.
Throw in additional.
Mayor, we don't. We did initially, and then at the last study session, because the industry was concerned with that, it was agreed to take that out, and then we started working the tiered approach, and we do think we've come up with some language that is pretty tight, and if council agrees, I think PD would support moving that into version one as well.
Yeah, that was the direction.
But because of the discussion at the last study session, it was removed.
And what, let's say I'm a store owner and I say, gee, that's nice, Chief, but I disagree with you. I don't think this was caused at all by lack of lighting. What's an owner to do? Comply or what?
In the ordinance, there's an appeal process where they could appeal to the city manager or his designee, and then they could make that argument.
And then the city manager's voice is final, except for unless they want to bring legal action.
Yes.
Okay.
Meeting with the stakeholders 2 weeks ago, some of their concerns were they wanted the landlord added on the registration forms, which is something that we will look at doing. They wanted the employee training points to be in order of importance, and we can change that on the ordinance. It's just changing the order in which they are listed. They wanted employee safety training section. They want that changed to from biannually to every 2 years. So some wordsmithing that we can change. We're okay with that. Employee safety training section, they want to change next annual training to next required training, and we're okay with that verbiage. Request the secure floor display moved from level 2 to level 3, and we support bumping up to level 3. And they, on the request to require additional security measures in level 3, they wanted to reword to soften the verbiage, and like I said before, I think we're comfortable with our wording because it's direct, but it still allows the chief to make specific changes on specific crime-related issues. Then appeals process for fines. If it goes to fine, that would be run through the court if there was it got that far where someone was being criminally charged or fined. So that would be the appeals process. So before I go really gray, you have two alternatives in front of you. And there's a lot of moving pieces in these ordinances that we're talking about today. We can move this piece into Tier 1, but I really hope that we're getting to the point where we're starting to, at least these pieces we're able to live with, and you know, if we want to move some around, the industry is really close, we met with them, and this list is really all the concerns that they had
with the tiered approach.
With the tiered approach, correct.
Could I ask you a question? Whether we go with alternative A or alternative B, it seems like there's a lot of work at the police department. You're either going to have to go through and do an analysis of every convenience store in the city, and then I'm assuming there will be a flood of requests for variance. You're going to have to analyze those request and come up with alternatives to the full implementation, a security plan or whatever. That's going to take a lot of people. If you go to the tiered approach by its nature is somewhat of a complex issue and complex approach. How do you pay for all of it? What are you going to do in your budget to free up the number of people that would be required to implement this program and to monitor it and to do that, what kind of plan do you have figured out within the police part of the budget?
Mayor and Council, yeah, we've discussed that. The responsibility would fall under our crime prevention specialist. There's approximately 150 convenience stores throughout the city. That would be divided up amongst the four crime prevention specialists, and they would have the amount of time to, is it 90 days? 90 days, each one would be responsible to do assessments. They're already doing assessments and working with all their convenience stores already. So it would be additional work, but we believe that we would be able to absorb that work through their normal work.
So what you're saying is that they would be able to redirect their efforts either in the what they're doing right now with convenience store, they just focus in on what's under the ordinance, and then if there's something else, rather than do this crime prevention, they do that crime prevention because it's a higher priority.
Yes, sir. It would be additional work, but they're already working with them, so we don't feel it would be something that we could not handle without adding additional
Okay. Any other questions? Councilman Finter.
The only thing that causes me heartburn when we talk about the online reporting, I don't think there should be any penalty with that. It's to our advantage to have them use that. It frees up our limited officer resources. It was one of the main goals that we do that. Maybe I'm missing a piece of that. Why in the world would we penalize them if they utilize that 99% of the time to be able to help us achieve the challenge that we're trying to overcome?
Mayor and Councilmember Fincher, the online reporting, when it's in implemented, will definitely be a advantage for us on police resources. However, there is some level of investigation resources that report will still go to detective, and if there's follow-up to be done. So there is still some element of investigatory work that's going to have to be done. When we talked about this, it's something that we're going to have to reevaluate, because there is some potential abuse where a store could not change a thing, and as long as they could have 100 crimes and they report online. It does reduce our police workload, but it's will still have a public safety factor at that store, because they're continuing to have crime. But once we are online, I think we are going to have to look at a possibility of, do we do a ratio of, okay, maybe that 7 is it, 5 calls for service and, you know, 5 online. I think we can't tell, because it's not up. And we want to still have an impact on the safety of the convenience store.
Councilmember Higgins.
But what you just explained only comes into play on the tiered approach. It wouldn't come into play on the basic version 1.
Correct. The version 1 does not have anything associated with calls for service.
So just to agree with Councilmember Kavanaugh and Councilmember Richens, version 1, I think, is ready to go now. We've been working on this for such a long time. And we could include the verbiage from 2 that would allow the chief to come in if that doesn't work. And, you know, let's reevaluate it in 6 months to a year and see if it's working. I'm getting grade 2 while we do this. This has been going on a long time. So I say let's just go with the version. And I think version 1 really was what the intent was when we worked on it in the Public Safety Subcommittee. And move on and see what happens. Again, as long as there's a variance available, which there is, for that convenience store, old, or whatever their concerns are.
Okay, any other questions? I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, because there has been a lot of thought. And I think that there are some very worthy goals and objectives. And I'm fully supportive of implementing those goals and objectives when there's a new store coming on, or where there's a remodel or things like that. I'm just not getting the connection between the goals and objectives and the plan we have here. And part of that is, I think, because the process has gone on and trying to make everyone happy, which you do when you're doing ordinances, it seems like we're doing things that may or may not achieve the objective, which is why I ask about the felony calls. I mean, to me, if a store has 2 felonies in a month, there's a problem. There's either a problem in the neighborhood, or at least there's something worth looking at. There's something, and it could be the store, and that's a lot different than having 5 beer runs, in my mind. Maybe I'm wrong, but to me, those are two different things, and I'm not sure that either one of these plans really addresses those. Maybe you can't. Maybe you're right, you can't. I also think that if we're going to impose added burdens on existing businesses through ordinance, through the ordinance and the rule of law, which means it's forcing people to do things, we better be dang well sure that that is not a willy-nilly kind of thing and just say, well, gee, you know, you're collateral damage almost. We were going after these 10. In order to get these 10, we had to do this ordinance, and, gee, sorry you got roped into this. And I get it with the variance and the plan. That's still a burden. There's still cost, and there's still things that are imposed on existing business. And I just haven't gotten there that you've convinced me that there's truly a connection between the real reduction in serious crime and public safety and the things we're asking these other 135 businesses to do. I'm for some reason I'm not getting it. Maybe that's, you know, that may be my problem. Maybe I'm on this one. I'm just missing the point, and I'm probably in the minority here on the council on this. But there is no such thing as a minor burden on business because, you know, especially in this environment, everything government does to business is a significant burden. There's lesser burdens, there's greater burdens, but anytime you you impose that, there better be a good reason in my mind. And if there's a good reason, I have absolutely no problem because that's for the benefit of the entire community. I'm just not getting it, and I don't know why. I'm just not feeling that either one of these plans really accomplishes the real goal in and of itself without creating huge additional other costs internally or externally. And you know your department better, obviously better than I do. I'm just wondering whether you really can handle this, what might happen. I don't know. I'm just not to that yet, that, well, we can just take these four people and rearrange. I think it's going to be a lot bigger burden, workload, on either one than you think. And I hope you can, but I'm thinking that there's going to be more of a cost to us. And if that's the case, then one of the original objectives, which is to reduce the burden on police resources, seems to have gone out the door because now we've just traded. We've traded one burden of police resources for another burden of police resources. So I fully support the implementation of SEPTED on new stores and that. The other one, I don't know that I'm there yet. But like I said, I think obviously with all the work that public safety has done in it, they're feeling a lot more comfortable down the road than I am. So I'm probably in the minority here. Councilman Richens?
If not this, then what? What would you propose if not this? It's easy to take a position saying this isn't the solution, then what's the solution? I know you're not a cop, but throw something out here.
Well, once again,
where you're trying to get to.
I'd like to go back and identify and look at those 10%. We keep coming back and saying that 10% of our stores create over half of our crimes. Is there something we can do that addresses the 10% of those stores without bringing all these other under the envelope? We're so worried about being unfair to the 10% that we're unfair to the other 90%. And I don't have a direct answer with that because I've been thrown different alternatives. So, but I would like to go back and see what are the real issues.
I mean, if there's a way for the, if they fall into this high crime convenience store category, is there a way for the chief to impose these measures on that store without an ordinance that burdens all of the stores?
That's a problem.
I don't know, and that's not an alternative that's been thrown out. So, yeah, Councilmember Summers.
No, I think we did address that. The problem was that law didn't allow you to pick on any one in particular business, even if it did have a higher crime burden. You couldn't pick on the business. You had to set the laws. The bar had to be even for everybody.
Wait a second. The bar isn't even for everybody. You're not picking on a business. You're picking on
your
activity.
City attorney.
Can something be crafted to address the store?
Yeah, I don't buy that. I'm sorry. If you got some place that has 50 places in a month, you're saying that to stop those 50 things, you've got to impose burden on everybody who has zero?
No, and that was what we were trying to accomplish with the tiered approach. So we came up with 7 calls for service. I think the police department identified that criteria or that break point. If there's some other, level, if we could look at that. I think they did look at the idea of can we use felonies versus misdemeanors.
Is there a way that if a convenience store has 0 calls for service because they operate their business in such a crime prevention way, that they don't have to change a thing? Or do all those businesses already meet most of these categories and that's why they get 0 calls for service?
I think that would be the point. I believe that most, if not all, of the convenience stores already meet level 1, and the industry did not have any objections with the level 1 security measures. So those that have less than 7 calls per service per month would not be dramatically impacted with the tiered approach. Those that continue to experience problems, we would bump up to the level 2. So we were trying to use the version 2 to address the concerns of the council, but I don't know if we've met that.
Well, I think you did a great job of trying to do that. I just don't know whether the majority of the council, because it seems like Councilman Higgins is, before we had about a split as far as tiered, and we wanted to look at it to see what the alternatives were. Okay, any other questions?
So I'm just trying to get it, because if the industry is already doing level 1, can't we have level 1 be the ordinance and then level 2 and 3 happen at the discretion of the chief for businesses that have high calls for service? Couldn't that be his his purview that's saying, look, these businesses, we need to work through you. Instead of having this tiered ordinance all over the place, just make the ordinance a level one and then additional security measures as defined by this two and three thing can be imposed, and let him have a menu of options. If, like you said, if there's a, you know, if the problem is graffiti in the back because there's no lighting, put some lighting back there, please.
Yes. I think we could look at that. Now, I might turn it over to the chief, but I would anticipate that the industry would like some criteria set out, and they would like to know the chief wouldn't come in and impose what they believe is some of the more significant security provisions that we now have in level three, that the chief wouldn't impose that without trying a lesser.
Everybody tries to wiggle at it. Everything. It seems to me like there's a certain obligation the businesses have to our community for doing business in our community as well. And they're adding a tax burden on people that don't even go to convenience stores because we have to send police there over and over and over. So, I mean, if that's not the connection, Mayor, I don't know what is. You know, we're trying to reduce that.
Well, it's a tough call.
Yeah, I don't know that I even feel satisfied or comfortable with going with one way or the other, because I'm kind of with the mayor on this in some respects about, you know, adding burdens that we don't need to. But if everybody's doing level one, then level one is business. If that's already the industry best practice, is it? I mean, my industry people are out there. Can you nod? Is the first tier already industry best practice?
Yes.
That's what they're all doing. So, I mean, if that's all what they're all doing, why are we chasing that?
I don't think we're chasing it. I think what we're trying to set is a minimum standard so that all convenience stores will have these security measures and without imposing an additional burden on the stores. So setting up or just taking what the industry says is best practices. And then it's how do we go beyond that? How do we set criteria, first, to identify those stores that continue to have problems, and second, what should the additional security measures be? We can certainly write it the way you just mentioned, Councilmember Richens, if that's the direction of the council, just to give a laundry list of what the chief can select from.
Okay, so you could make level one the best practices. That's what everybody's agreed to do. That you can make that the framework of the ordinance. Then he has I guess that's what I'm saying. Let him have the discretion. If the industry doesn't like the discretion he's taken, we're going to hear about it. We're going to have a chance to review it, I'm sure. The industry will be contacted.
Can I ask you a question? Several convenience stores from a certain brand shut down in the last, 2 months? They were the old stores. Do we have any idea, or have we looked at, and you probably haven't, if those were among the listed in the perpetrators, since they were old stores and therefore did not have the SEPTED principles that I know, you know, the new stores, the new QTs, the new Circle Ks, all the ones that have been built recently appear to have been built toward those and would qualify for those highest level of SEPTED principles.
The ones that I'm aware of that have shut down, for instance, the one at West Southern, Dobson and Southern, that was just replaced. That was a Circle K that closed down, but they rebuilt.
It just flat out, for example, on Greenfield and Broadway, Circle K just shut down. I know of at least four or five stores, Stapley and Broadway, old stores that would not meet these new standards, would meet probably level one, but that's it. They've shut down. Does that have any impact?
Well, a lot of times they come back as mom and pop stores.
Oh, that's true. Well, they get leased, but on this one, they would then be required
if they bulldozed it, but.
Yeah, that's interesting.
What if they reopen? Are we going to require?
Well, that was one of the questions as far as the definition of rebuilding, restoring. I thought we said if they have to pull a building permit to do work, then that would require them to meet the SEPTED standards. Did we end up with that? Did we end up with a definition of refurbishment? I know we talked about it, but I can't remember if we ever actually
decided. Mayor, this is Christine Stutz, who helped draft the ordinance.
Yes, Mayor, to answer your question, the remodel pertains to basically 50% more of the store. So if they do shut down and reopen as a new store, they would be required to comply back to your new or remodeled store's position. So, yes, that's how it's currently defined. I believe the term used in there is remodel of the store. But.
Okay. Well, what's the sense? Councilmember Higgins, you're the one that talked about tiered last time. How do you feel now?
I don't recall that discussion. I would have to go back and review. I thought that we had actually agreed that the one approach would be good as long as there were options for those people who are already, already in compliant or had the issues, like you said, if we were to block something, they'd lose 70% of their surface area or whatever. That was the main concern I had, that those individuals had that option to go to a variance, to not have to, and because typically, I mean, you wouldn't give somebody a variance that, say, was the highest calls for service, even if it took 70% of their window area. I would assume you would say, hey, that's too bad. You're the highest call in the city. You have to do these things. So I'm making an assumption that a variance is only going to be going to a proprietor that already has a very good track record. So
why can't we just grandfather those then?
Again, if you go to that section on variance, at least the way I'm reading it, it really is an issue of allowing for an alternative. It's like a hardship issue. It's not necessarily whether you're a good, you have good crime rate or not. It's really as an alternative to the safety and security plan. It's an in lieu of security measure. It's not a reward for the assumption
That gets to my point. Isn't that counterproductive? We have someone who has no record of bad behavior, either by the citizens or by the store, and yet we're not giving them credit for that. I mean, I could feel more comfortable with the first version if we, for example, if someone over the last X period had shown they had not had any troubles, was automatically grandfathered or granted a certain level of variance or a certain level of thing, simply because our objective, once again, is to reduce calls, which they haven't had any, and to maximize public safety, which they've shown through however they're managing their store, they have done that. I mean, doesn't that meet our objectives?
So it's two-tier.
No.
Well, I mean, if they come in, rather than going through the complete process of doing an evaluation or whatever, if someone is in an area that is a low-crime area and they have operated their store and there's been absolutely no or very little, that they would automatically be given a certain variance, not a variance, but maybe a grandfather says, you're not required to do anything until such a time. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
But on the other hand, I think it's important to remember that we not only have the crime prevention as a key element, it's also criminal apprehension, which is also an element and purpose that we are trying to achieve with the requirements that we have here. And so that's why we are proposing that all the stores meet a minimal level or a specific level of security, because these are designed not only to reduce the occurrence of crime, but if crime does occur, it increases the probability of catching the bad guys. And so that's why, you know, I think you might have a good operator that hasn't had a call for service before, but with these particular measures that we put in here, you increase the probability of catching the bad guy if they have a bad event occur at their store.
And I understand what you're saying. I personally have a real problem with government asking someone to do that when they have no history and it's not been proven that there's a propensity of crime there. But that's because that's a significant burden. When you start going to high level or any level of video surveillance, you know, the vice mayor does this for a living. He can tell us there is no simple system that's effective. You can go with a gerrymandered or out of the box kind of thing, but it's not going to catch people because you're going to get fuzzy pictures. But I would feel more comfortable, and if this helps at all to move us along, I would feel more comfortable if we came up with some standard the other way that said we're going to establish a standard, which is going to hopefully get people up to a minimum level, as Councilmember Richard talked about. But if there is something that rewards, or if not rewards, certainly allows them to escape the punishment of having to go through this formal process of applying for a variance, that there's a grandfather, and it says if you meet this, 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 and this, then it's simply, boom, gone. So, and I don't think we're not going to get there today, so.
And the only concern is that disincentive to call the police for an incident.
No, this is based on previous experience.
And that would be fine.
So we're going to. Because any new store is going to have to meet the standards.
So.
So.
based on X amount of years, we'll pick a year.
And then it
won't continue rolling forward, right? We all follow that.
I think, Mayor, we're still in the middle of discussion. Can we table
this
and table bring this. It back?
Let's come back.
In
and
a
I know
couple
we'd
week, within
this,
the next
this
couple
important,
weeks.
This is an important deal. So, all right. Thank you. We'll bring it back. Thank you so much. Acknowledge receipts of minutes, boards and committees. Have a motion from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Unless, Vice Mayor, do you want to report on something you've done?
Not since Thursday.
Okay, Mr. Brady.
Yes, Mayor, Council, following tonight's council meeting and the swearing in of council members Glover, Higgins, and Summers, there will be a reception down here in the lower level chambers. I invite everyone to participate in that. Also, tomorrow, January 25th at 2 p.m., we're going to have the groundbreaking for Crescent Crown Distributing. That'll be located at 1640 West Broadway Road. That's at 2 p.m. tomorrow. So we're excited about welcoming Crescent Crown to Mesa. And the next day, Wednesday, January 26th at 8 a.m., we'll be having the ribbon cutting for the East Valley Men's Shelter. If you recall, the council directed some of the stimulus dollars we got through from HUD, from CDBG for this purpose. The study session for this Thursday has been canceled so that we all may attend the mayor's breakfast, which will be at 7:30 a.m. at the Hilton.
Pancakes. Punishment.
And our next study session then will be February 3rd. Thank you.
All right. We have one request to speak on pre-scheduled public opinion. Lauren Johnson. Hi, Lauren. Welcome.
Hi.
Please go ahead and have a seat there, if you'd like. Sure.
I have someone else as well.
Okay. Why don't you introduce your co-speaker?
Okay. My name is Lauren Johnson, and this is Vianney Lopez. Today we are here as a community coalition to explain. Thanks.
And by the way, you have 3 minutes. Okay, so I'll let you know when you get
okay,
close to your time. Okay.
I am from the Mesa Prevention Alliance. We are a community coalition in the city of Mesa, and we are specifically focused on reducing alcohol and drug abuse for youth in our city. And today we are here to express our extreme importance of passing the proposed convenience store ordinance as a community coalition. We have found that by addressing youth accessibility, availability, and visibility to alcohol ad saturation, that this will greatly decrease crime in the city of Mesa. Due to the high number of youth stealing alcohol, it means that there is a high availability and accessibility in the city. And as a coalition, we are determined to be behind our city council to enforce and pass laws such as the proposed convenience store ordinance. A local condition that we have found is that beer runs is one of the main four local conditions for youth alcohol use in the city of Mesa. And we feel that if there's an increased security measure, and that will decrease crime and decrease youth alcohol rates. Today I have Vianney Lopez here with me. She is also a Mesa Prevention Alliance Coalition member, and she is a peer leader in the city of Mesa. And she has a few things she'd like to say.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Vianney Lopez, and I am speaking on behalf of the other peer leaders. So we've been doing some projects, and we've been having some events, and we've been doing environmental scanning. And it's for counting the number of alcohol ads that the stores have outside. And we found that there were a total of 623 alcohol ads in a 3-mile radius Broadway corridor from Country Club to Gilbert. And I actually have some pictures of the stores, if you'd like to see them. Okay, so as you guys can see, most of the stores were completely covered of the alcohol ads, and it was like almost impossible to see what was inside of them. And I feel that it's kind of dangerous to go in there because for some policemen, if there is a crime or something and it's covered, the windows are covered in alcohol ads, they wouldn't know what's going on inside. And there might be some danger, and they might not be safe, and they don't know because they don't know what's inside. So most of the stores that are just covered, I really don't like to go inside of them. And my parents don't even let me because I just don't feel that it's safe for me and for other youth to go inside. Thank you.
And just to close today, since we have a very short amount of time, I'd just like to provide a quote from the Director of Prevention at Community Bridges, a local substance abuse agency, as well as the Director of the Mesa Prevention Alliance. She quotes, unquote, "Laws that are enforced help our youth to be safer and are less likely to drink and to use drugs." So as the Mesa Prevention Alliance, we would like to support our local Mesa Police Department in order to enforce these laws and make Mesa a community and make it a safer place for all. Thank you very much for all your time today.
No, thank you. And I know looking here, this can be pretty intimidating. You guys did a great job. Thank you. Thank you so much. You really did well. Thanks. Okay, any other business? I have a motion adjourned from Councilmember Summers, a second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll see you upstairs in about 7 minutes.